To the Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and joining me once again, the man with sick hick hair to my dick wick wear, it's Brian. Hey, Brian.
That's a pretty good one. You pulled that one. You've been working on that one all day? That's a good one.
I wouldn't say I was working on it all day, but I was working on it in the 20-odd minutes in between. Well, what was originally 20 minutes between me completing the episode and getting the notes up ready to record. And of course, as life is wont to do to us at times, whether it be on my end or yours, we've been having some audio issues, which has been interfering with our recording tonight. Hopefully, the original issues have gone away. There is another issue that I'm having on my end. So while you're listening to this podcast, every once in a while you might hear the faintest, or maybe not so faint, sounds of people jabbering and laughing in the background. That's because my idiot neighbors seem to think Sunday is the same as a Friday and Saturday night, so even though it's well after midnight now, it is actually 12:40 a.m. right now, and it's not a holiday in New York tomorrow. It's not like maybe next Monday, maybe we still do the Columbus Day thing. I'm not really sure anymore. But no, they're doing their smoking and their drinking and what the kids do out there. So if you should hear that in the background or you hear me getting annoyed, that's what it's about. And any minute now, the cat will start meowing as well. But as far as...
Well, you could. I was just going to say, you can just pretend that you're podcasting from a Kansas City speakeasy.
Yes, but if it was a speakeasy, we'd have to be quiet. And finally, speaking of audio, you might have just heard our new opening for this podcast. I've actually commissioned without, you know, like actual money changing hands, because, you know, me giving someone money, that's never going to happen. Our resident other often co-host for our STVD podcast, especially as of the last year or so, since Dan has usually been busy more often than not, has been Jamie. And her husband, much like you, Brian, is more than fair to middling with a guitar. And he actually arranged and composed both an opening and closing theme for our podcast. And although it was originally conceived for the Fargo podcast specifically, he's actually based some of what he did in the opening on the more Kansas City stylings, and what you'll hear in the outro is more based, has got a bit more of a slightly Italian flavor to it. Don't ask me, I just hear cool twangy guitars and I'm all like Duane Eddying it up, so I'm cool with it. It may very well be the opening and closing theme we use for most of our podcasts moving forward, at least the ones that it's appropriate for. I mean, that opening theme you just heard, I think it's perfect for Better Call Saul. So, which means eventually when Better Call Saul comes back, which is probably be 2022 at this point, those podcasts that make their way through YouTube, but then get banned in the UK and other countries because we keep using this piece of music that we don't have the rights to, we're finally going to use music that's not an issue. So after five seasons, they'll finally get to hear our Better Call Saul podcast out there. So those twos and threes of people have been waiting patiently for that.
Okay. You know what? Finally, we'll be huge in Japan and in Denmark. And
yes,
you know, finally, we'll be huge in Europe.
There we go. And maybe someone can reserve a spot for me to move to so I can get out of this place. Anyway, we have yet to say what we're actually here for. We are here once again to talk about the latest episode of Fargo. Tonight's episode, in fact, which was the third official episode of the season. And I know I'm going to mispronounce it, but I'm going to give it a shot anyway. The title was Raro Piarlo. That's probably what it is. By the way, for anyone wondering, obviously it's Italian. It's a kind of a sort of a version of a phrase like meaning like to double up or to duplicate. I don't know if it pertains to something that's talked about in one of the scenes that we'll talk about a little later. You know, that double V thing that, double victory that Dr. Senator refers to, or, you know, double cross possibly, because there is an element of that that happens in this. It could be a number of things. So as we pick our way through the episode, we'll probably come to some conclusions. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so we were wondering when we finished the two episodes last week, if they were going to directly pick up exactly where they left off. And they sort of kind of did. I love that they did it with a little, we started a little further back so we could, you know, be properly introduced to the Timothy Oliphant character, the aforementioned Dick Wickware or Deffy. How's that? There's so many little things I loved about touches here. I mean, I'll just gonna start off with one silly one, and then I figured this is a character that might be dear to your heart already, so I'll let you chat about it a little bit. That first shot when he's looking in the storm drain, and you have that moment of the shadow of his hat and glasses, gorgeously composed shot. And then as I'm watching, you know, a few more minutes of it, I'm thinking, good Lord, that hat's got to be way bigger than either Raylan Givens or Seth Bullock's hat. I am positive that hat is far bigger than both those hats. And I think it's by on purpose too. I think that's a very deliberate choice.
Well, it's interesting looking at Timothy Oliphant's choices for him to pick another lawman. You and I wondered what that would look like. And Dick Wickware is certainly different than Raylan Givens or Seth Bullock. And, you know, we meet the straight-laced Mormon, tolerate-no-fools lawman from Utah, who's on the case.
But I could be wrong about this because I haven't really looked into it. I can't help but think when they created the character, they had Timothy Oliphant in mind from the get-go. And I feel like there are aspects of both Givens and Bullock that they've incorporated into this character also from the get-go. Because, you know, he certainly has the Raylan Givens wise-assery about him. But he's also got the straight-laced piousness of a Seth Bullock at the same time. So in a weird way, although obviously Seth Bullock wasn't a Mormon, but you know he was still a man of upstanding character, shall we say? This feels to me very much like a fusion of those two characters, and whether it's, I mean, I don't know how much we can glean from just one specific act of one episode. At first I was wondering if they were going the satire route. Is he kind of riffing on those? And there's maybe a little bit of it. But then once we get further, you know, further into the sequence of scenes, when he's questioning the family before and after they search the house, it's like, well, he's a serious character. I mean, again, he's one of our only. Every season of Fargo has to have, you know, your main one or a variety of law enforcement officers. And right now, the only ones we're really focusing on at all has been, you know, Jack Houston's, what's that character's name again? Otis.
Otis.
Otis Weff. who we already know from the get-go, kind of corrupt and also got serious issues. And now we have Deffy, and pairing up the guy with the overt OCD with the ultimate smartass it's a nice little pairing there. Just and then when we get the whole how's that happening over and over, I thought that was hysterical.
Yeah, it was a good start, and the interesting thing about Fargo that we always see is the layers get peeled on these characters, and it'll be it will be an interesting journey to see if he is going to be sort of a moral center, because we've seen all kinds of different law people. If he's going to be sort of maybe upright, or if he's corruptible, we do see a hint of white supremacy and racism in his conversation early on with the local law enforcement officer, with the local sheriff. But it'll be interesting to see if he plays it straight or if he's a little bit corrupt.
Right. Well, so far so good. My conception of him so far does not appear that he would be. It seems like he might be one of the only the non-corruptible types as of yet, but they could take a sudden left turn. I don't know how. Obviously, there's no way of knowing right now how strongly he's going to factor into the overall story, unless they decide to incorporate into it, which would be interesting. The way he was speculating about the case that Otis was working on, which we know he already actually knows the whole story behind, and so on and so forth. But if he somehow gets involved in that, even though right now there's no reason he should, but maybe he might start poking his own nose into it, especially since he hears it's probably the spaghetti eaters in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Because right now I wasn't, my assumption about his character, which I'm hoping is actually wrong, just because I love watching Timothy Oliphant do a role like this, is he was going to be very much a side character, and maybe where they might go. And again, Noah Hawley will always defy expectations and predictions more often than not, both to the better and the worse, mostly the better. Because one thought I would have is we're introduced to the Jack Houston cop, Otis Weff, as being, he's already corrupted. He's already kind of the Italians or the Fadas inside man, so to speak. What if he overcomes that? What if that's because there's your built-in story arc, character arc, whatever you want to call it, right there. They could go that route, but one might say that might be predictable, So don't know. Although what's not predictable is his choice of curses. This is an explicit podcast, so warning to everyone. I can't say this without using the actual word. I've never heard anyone say "go fuck your aunt and uncle." I've never heard that before.
Is that that was an interesting choice? Yes.
I was like, is that a Midwestern thing? Because I've heard about your mother. That's usually where we go. Sometimes your sister, but I've never heard aunt and uncle before.
No, certainly different. That's not a colloquialism I'm familiar with.
Oh, and finally, just the one more thing about the Jack Houston character. I do kind of. I am getting a kick out of the fact he keeps his way of kind of keeping himself in check and almost trying to a mantra to calm himself down. It's not really a mantra, more of a meditative use, is him going one little, two little, three little Indians, four little, five little, six little Indians, seven little, eight little, nine little, 10 little Indian boys. I just remembering that from a kid. And so I'm here, it's like, oh, wow. How old am I? Jesus. Anyway. Yeah, obviously, and the whole opening scene was more about just introducing the Timothy Oliphant character and then pairing these two up. My suspicion is that these two are going to be paired up for at least the next few episodes. I mean, obviously, they went to the house to looking for the robber gals. Is it Zeldane? Is that the sister's name? Is it Zeldane?
Yeah.
Zeldane. I know the other one's name is Swanee. I kind of just want to call them Bonnie and Claudette. that's
pretty badass.
Or Bonnie and Bonnie. Yeah, I got my issues with them, but we'll get there later. But
I think I have Swanee and Zelmir, maybe.
Zelmir. That's probably what it is. Thank you for correcting it, so one less bad review. But like I said, I was just calling them Bonnie and Claudette because, they're robbers. There you go. Claudette would be the anyway. So that was really the first act was really all about just, I felt it was just more about character introduction than anything else, and delaying of pie eating. So, and I just love it. I just, that pie is the ticking bomb. I'm just like, and I was waiting the whole episode for him to go by, like, who's going to eat the pie? Who's going to eat the, because you know, someone's going to eat it. And I love that it was, Claudette, i.e. Swanee. So, and we go there later on with the, I'll just skip to it since I'm already talking about it. Brian, you watched The Sopranos, right?
Yes.
Do you recall there was like a minor, very minor storyline? Maybe it was only in one episode, but I thought it was maybe two, where there was one character, one of the low level minions, I think, it, if I'm not mistaken, who every time they were pulling a job or something, he had to go to the bathroom there. So he may be doing something, and then he'd have to be taking a crap, and it was always audible because, David Chase did not shy away from bodily functions on The Sopranos, as I recall. But it was like a nerves thing, which I'll just say I can relate to and leave it at that because I don't want people to start tuning out of the podcast. But this obviously was brought about by the epic hack that Arietta had put into the pie in the previous episode. And I was wondering how it was going to manifest, because I always think of it as it kind of makes you gag or throw up. I did not recall that it could have an effect in the other direction, though it makes perfect sense. And we're three episodes into Fargo, and dare I say, should the show be called Fartgo at this point? Because that's a lot of farting humor in just three episodes.
Yeah, so I kind of had the same thought that it's been maybe a little more scatological than usual this season, and starting with the big laugh of the Fata boss in the car, right, and going to this. But yeah, and it continued on, and it used it, like you said, it made the pie and the effects of the pie a ticking time bomb.
Yeah.
That you knew was going to go off. And it was both kind of gross and kind of funny the way it was used throughout the episode.
Oh yeah. When they're hiding in the coffin together, she farts in a coffin. I kept thinking, oh my God, there's not a worse possible space I can imagine. And that's worse than a phone booth, because it's even tighter quarters. And then everything that takes place during the robbery. And why on earth they think it's a remotely good idea to rob these people is insane. I'm sorry. It's just, how do you not foresee how badly this could possibly go? Not at the during the actual robbery, but after it. These are bad. You're stealing from bad people. They're going to come after you to kill you. This isn't just like robbing a bank where now there'll be a manhunt after you, whatever. Criminals will be looking for you. They may put things together. I just think this is a stupid, stupid, stupid thing to do.
I got the impression that Zelmer thought, because, and maybe this is the tie that her family's, under the thumb of this group, mm-hmm, that it could kill two birds with one stone, and that in a way she justified trying to go for a big score by saying it would help her sister, but clearly not looking at all the consequences and realizing that it wasn't going to work out well.
Right. There is really no reason. Oh, they're making even more noise out there. I'm going to murder all of them, because now they're singing. So there's probably someone out there with a guitar singing right now. Well, you can go join them, Brian.
I think you need to bake them a pie.
How they cannot see the consequence? Like, why would that in any way, shape, or form resolve their debt situation? I see no connection between those two. So it made no sense to me. By the way, and just to throw it out there, because it just popped into my head, and when it's there, I got to get rid of it. There is a, I'm going to say, based on what the theme, one of the overall themes of this season is, quite frankly, about immigrants, about the American dream, about striving and you know, the caustic and the toxicity involved and whatever. It's therefore, it's not a coincidence. It's an apple pie, which is about as emblematic of America as you can get, you know, and the fact that, you know, that, but there's this something toxic that's been, that's in it, that's been unearthed. It's like, okay, I see what you're doing there, Noah. I see the metaphors. I get it. It's not that subtle, but I still enjoyed it. I don't care. You
know? Yeah. I mean, it is. And I did like, we got a little bit of Swanee's story of her dad and the talk of ghosts and, you know, that houses aren't the things that are truly haunted. And I like that. And she's, of course, saying this as she's eating the pie.
The pie. And, of course, knowing that her background is from, we already knew, or I think we'd already been told that she was at least part Native American. And I believe she indicates here, is it that she's both Native American and Chinese? That's what it's,
yes,
which, and that might be, I mean, I know the act, oh, I know the actress is at the very at minimum part Native American, just based on her name, because she's got a very clearly a Native American name with the, was it Amber Midthunder or whatever the heck it is, I can't remember right now, but you know what I mean. So again, having someone with of those specific origins be the one who is eating the poisoned pie, you know what I mean. The tainted pie is a better way to put it, which represents America. Yeah, that seems about right. Yep.
Yeah, totally. And being a part of the plan, she's the one that says, they say, why are you going to do something? And she says, because we're outlaws. And that's her justification. And Zelmir is trying to convince herself that it's to help her sister, but that's really just her talking to herself and saying that this will help, when really they're just hitting a big lick. And, you know, I didn't do the math, and we've done that on other shows before. I don't know what 20,000 in 1950 compares to now, but I mean, that's probably a hell of a lot of money for that time.
Right. Yeah. I didn't even think to do the math on it, because I was too busy just disapproving of the plan, and especially when you puked on most of the money anyway, so good luck cleaning that. such a bad idea, but whatever. I'm finding them annoying, so I'm just not rooting for them. I'm just not. That's just, you know, maybe I'm the pious one now. I just something about them just bugs me, because they're teaching that poor young girl the wrong message. Anyway,
Well, that brings up an interesting thought I had watching the episode, is that she was really in the background of this episode compared to her prominence in the first two. And we had wondered, because she sort of was a narrator and fairly prominent character, about what her role would be going forward. And, you know, she was really pushed in the background this time.
Yeah, that's very true. It's a good point there. I do wonder if that will be the case for the rest of the season, or if if, number one, the storyline involving this family, whatever, will, and I guess now the sister, the robbers, whatever, will weave its way throughout the season or not. Obviously, them robbing, you know, the Cannon organization or syndicate, whatever we call them, would seem to indicate it should play a part, but also right now it seems like the Cannons are blaming, they think this is part of an orchestrated thing that the Fadas could be behind. So I don't know if they think this is just happens to be it's coincidental just yet. I mean, we'll wait and see. One would say, why would the Fada send two women? That really doesn't sound like something Italians would do, especially in 1950. But, I guess we'll just wait and see on that. One of the the scenes I really enjoyed in this was actually the second act that followed the stuff with Wickware. That's when we have that meeting between Dr. Senator, again, the names, and he's meeting with, I hope I pronounce this name correct, I think it's Ebal Violante, another great name, who seems to be, he's one of the older members of the Fada Syndicate, whatever. Obviously, he doesn't have that last name, but the way he's been presented in a couple other episodes, again, no one is using the word consigliere as of yet, but he seems to be more the rational one who actually sees the forest for the trees and kind of weaves out plans more than for things than other characters have so far. You know, where you have the more reckless member like Calamita is. Now you got Gaetano in the mix as well. The other guy that just seems to be kind of schmucks. And, you know, then you have Josto himself, who I wonder how long he's going to be obsessed with just trying to kill that one, again, Dr. Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Fargo with the subtitle. We're really on the nose this season. much like a stinky fart. Anyway, but Dr. Senator, when he meets with Ebal Violante and they're talking about obviously the taking over the slaughterhouses. One of the things they do number of times in this entire episode, and it's one of those things, if it's done well, I always love it, is someone telling us a story. Kind of like what you were referring to when Swanee was telling the story. The ghosts and the haunting, which is a nice story, but this story is with Double V and the whole interviewing Hermann Göring and that whole thing. Great story. I really enjoyed it. That was one of my favorite moments in the entire episode.
Yeah, I love that story, and the sort of the underpinning of that is, you know, the belief that GIs would fight for America and come home and be treated well because they went and fought for their country and would gain the status of their white counterparts, which obviously was a lie.
Oh, huge lie. It's interesting because I was having a conversation not too long ago with a virtual stranger, actually. But we were talking about what's been going on, you know, in the country over the last several months, whatever. And the conversation eventually became about systematic racism. And no, we're not going to go too far down this road on this podcast, because that's too big, too deep a topic to really cover. And maybe not even appropriate for us to talk about to a certain degree. But one of the things I talked about to try to give a framework for, you know, how that's part of our institutions and whatever in society. I talked about the GI Bill, and you know, I framed it as like, have you heard about? You remember World War II? You've heard of the GI Bill, right? And they're like, oh yeah, we heard it. It's an older person I was talking to, and then I explained to them, like, hey, you know, not everybody benefited the same from the GI Bill. Some people didn't really benefit from it at all, and they were actually kept out of certain areas. Can you guess who those people were? So on and so forth. The story he tells kind of reminded me of that to a certain extent. He didn't mention the GI Bill by name, but in a way it's inferred. Because, you know, they thought you'd come back and, you know, you'd be treated differently. People wouldn't be trying to hang you from trees and all that sort of stuff. And when it does all that work, and then, yeah, I just... He's doing it. The idea was just as a final indignity to Göring, just to make him squirm having to talk to a Negro, as he says. So I really enjoyed the whole scene. I guess it all comes down to respect, a respected deal. You know, their word is as good as yours, and so on. And again, and also the reason why I think that maybe Violante may be someone taking a consigliere role with the Fadas. We already know that's Dr. Senator's role with the canons. That's clear. And so having these two meet makes me think, oh, they're the two quote unquote wise men for their respective organizations, families, whatever you want to, however you want to refer to it. They may be the smartest and most calculating men in the room, in whatever room they're in, so to speak.
Right. And if you think of the episode title, I mean, doubling up, I mean, there obviously is a lot of mirroring that happens in this episode. And that's one of the obvious examples, is their sit down. And I love that we learn that Dr. Senator, you know, he's not just learned in a few things, that he's actually, you know, he at one point says Dr. Senator Esquire and talks about writing a 400-page legal document of crimes with footnotes, and which gives you, you know, the background as to why he would have had the sophistication to help Lloyd design a new financial instrument to present to a bank. And, you know, he's really a brilliant, brilliant man. And I think by the time the end of that conversation, you know, his counterpart knows that what he's saying is serious. It's not just a threat, that he's a well thought out, well planned person that would be a formidable opponent. And, you know, if you were going to take somebody out to hurt Loy, he's probably the one you'd want to get, because he's pretty formidable.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. I mean, when there's a conversation later in the episode, initially when they're talking about taking someone out on the Cannon side, that would really hurt him. My first thought was like, oh, they're going after Dr. Senator. It's like, I know I said last week that actor always plays characters who, they always die in whatever TV show or movie he's in. They're like, no, don't kill him that quick. And then it turned out that wasn't where they were going at all, apparently.
Yeah.
And we'll get there soon enough, I think. Where do we go next? Oh, speaking of, I guess he is kind of involved in that. We get a little bit with the rabbi, so to speak. What do they have his name as? Rabbi, is it Rabbi Friedman? Rabbi Mulligan? Does he have like a rabbi and it's an Irish last name they give him, right? Because he's obviously Irish. I just don't have his character's name in front of me, and that's bad on me. Rabbi Mulligan. That's right. Oh, duh. Because we talked about it last week, about the possibility that he's likely an ancestor of Mike Mulligan. So he's having the conversation with Loy's youngest son about how he got and they talk about comparing it to baseball and how he got traded twice, whatever. And that's when we get Gaetano showing up, who is obviously, he's kind of the crazed bull. Speaking of ticking time bombs, he is the one who's always set to go off in any scene that he's in. And the actor is, he's clearly playing it up. he's definitely going for the wild-eyed, you know, borderline crazed performance here. I mean, it works, but it's, you know, it's definitely much like other things I was saying, not subtle.
But no, I thought watching him I was trying to place what he reminded me of, and he's very reminiscent, as if he could be a relative of Vincent D'Onofrio, and in the way that he does this role. And I almost had the thought, you know, that he was like the sort of hyper realized Italian version of you know, Private Pyle from Full Metal Jacket, that he's crazy. But unlike Private Pyle, he's pretty dangerous. And I think he's shrewder than people think he is. He is impulsive and does things, but I think we see him in this episode testing Giusto, to see how far he can push him, sitting in the chair, talking to the other members of the mob to see who will, you know, who he can influence. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, he's the problem.
Yeah, I was about to say, don't you dare compare him to dude from Better Call Saul, because I felt that's where you were going.
No,
I was going to say he's not that smart.
No.
That's quick. What's the character's name? You have to remember. It wasn't that long ago. What's his name?
Dude, it's been a million years.
I'm totally looking it up because I couldn't remember either. I know it's a very catchy name. Lalo.
Yes, Tony Dalton. Lalo.
Lalo. How could we forget Lalo? Gaetano, you're no Lalo. yeah, I could see the D'Onofrio thing. Absolutely. Again, every season of Fargo, obviously they're doing their nods and homages and riffs and whatever on any number of Coen brother things. And he, to me, just feels like, you know, one of the more broad, silly Coen brother creations I've seen a few times over the years. So, you know, everything from his pencil thin mustache to his slick back hair and everything else. I mean, his dad would probably be played by the guy, actor whose name I just forgot. Polito? John Polito? Whatever.
Yeah.
About to grab that one out of the thin air. There we go.
Coen brother's favorite.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking. Get that, but you know, I love him. You killed your own father for us. What's that like? But again,
yeah.
When we saw him last week at the end of the montage, and he takes the seat at the head of the table. You know, it's usually, you know, that's like the dad seat, and Justo has him get up again, tries to take his chair again. I mean, again, not subtle. We all know what you want to do. You couldn't be more clear that you want to take over. I like this seat. I like it. It's too big for you. I love when they all leave and Joss is like, it's not too big.
Yeah, Justo.
Justo
in this episode is a little more muted than he was in the first couple. He was, you know, agitated and a little more over the top. And I think I'm not saying he's going to settle in and be a good leader because he's doing cocaine and, you know, pretend shooting the doctor from the parking lot. But he obviously has to mute himself in comparison to Gaetano, and even says at some point to Gaetano, you know, I heard you sort of almost screwed things up at the slaughterhouse. And, so, I mean, there's some rational part of Justo, but there's not that much of a rational part to Gaetano.
Right. Now, to play with what you were saying before, to give Gaetano more credit, Gaetano bringing up the Dr. Harvard stuff, how he fit, whatever, that's putting a bee in Justo's bonnet.
Justo's bonnet.
So... And if we want to give him credit for, okay, he's being calculated about this, that's distracting him. That's keeping, you know, and, you know, he's taking his eye off the ball while Gaetano's obviously moving in and, you know, seeing which members of the family, you know, would fall under his sway or not, who's gonna you know, fall in right behind him, who's gonna still insist on, you know, Jasso is the true boss, etc. One way in having him, distracting him by doing it, knowing that he's not going to do, from what we've seen at least, until we see, you know, Schwartzman with a gun in his hand blowing somebody away, he's not the one to do that himself. We haven't seen that of his character. And what Gaetano doesn't know, but it's, you know, he's probably be happy to know that there's an additional distraction with the Orietta stuff, who just so coincidentally happens to be there. I love the nature of coincidence. That's what makes storytelling both ridiculous and beautiful all at the same time. That, you know, of course, the day that he's out there and doing the little finger shooting at Harvard at his window happens to be the day that Orietta is there for her job interview. Of course. Why not? Why wouldn't it be there? And, oh, by the way, who stays aroused, much less is able to ejaculate, if someone's singing "Glory, Glory, Hallelujah" in your face? That's I find that very strange.
It was like sex, drugs, and Christian hymns instead of rock and roll. Yeah. Very, very, very disturbing. And the performance of her quirkiness is it's both interesting and off-putting. the way she is. And she's the wild card to how this all shakes out.
Oh yeah. She's the Kirsten Dunst of this season right now.
Yes. Yes.
You know, except she's, the difference is, Kirsten Dunst had personality flaws, and as that season wore on, you could see things had taken a toll and she had kind of broken a little bit, you know, up there. But it was still based on the fact of the way she saw the world and the way she was, you know, extremely narcissistic and so on and so forth. This woman, there's a little bit more wrong with her. She's a bit more off, to say the least. You know, well, she's a murderer. So there's that. So I'm kind of worried about Dr. Harvard, who happens to be partial to the macaroon. So
challenge accepted.
Yes, that's great. It's like, how can I mix this into just macaroons? And again, going with the what I was calling the storytelling vibe. This isn't exactly like telling a story. It's more like, is it a parable? No. What is the right term? The thing I'm thinking about is when we pick up the next sequence of scenes is when Loy Cannon and his men are going into their warehouse where they're doing all the stuff, doing all the money counting and whatever. And there's that guy who's just hustling to get a little money for his clear habit that he has. And Loy Cannon pretty much makes an example of the guy. Again, I really, and, you know, he's also trying to teach a lesson to us. We realized that that was when I realized that guy was the other guy was his son. I don't think I had even picked up on that in the first two episodes, but this episode I realized, oh, that's his son that he's talking about.
Okay. Yeah, that took a surprising turn the way that they did it and he taught it, but he was obviously imparting a lesson that when you have money, that it changes the way people around you view you and what you can do for them. And almost in a weird way, says that if you give somebody a certain amount of hope, that they could be very dangerous.
So basically, you're saying follow the philosophy of Red from Shawshank Redemption, who, if I'm not mistaken, actually has a line, you know, hope can be a dangerous thing.
Yep.
I was not trying. Just to be clear, I was not trying to do that kind of, the kind of voice I might be accused of. I could do that, but I'm not going to do it.
You show somebody what you have, and it instantly they want to have it, and they see what it can offer them. And I really thought it was a nice line where he said, you know, the second he saw this, he saw his future.
Right, and then I just stole his future away from him. I'm still.
Yeah, even though I never gave him anything, I stole it away from him.
I really enjoyed that whole sequence. And then we also, we were wondering that guy, because he was basically being referred to as Happy's cousin, like he wasn't even worthwhile enough to have a name, might as well be a red shirt. We now know his name is Leon, and he's going to be the driver for Loy's son to, quote-unquote, help keep him on the path. And, of course, you know, once that happens, you know something bad's going to happen. So we were talking about Gaetano, and again, yeah, he's a troublemaker. That's when he's taking the measure of who's going to, you know, again, go along with him because he wants to take somebody out, kill one of them, kill someone close to him, someone he loves. And that's when we realize it's going to be the son. And he wants to take, kill two birds with one stone, so to speak. So he has Calamita, the guy, Constant Calamita. So that's that one of the many great names on the show. He wants him to take the Irish guy, Rabbi Milligan, with him, just to put him to the test. Which is interesting, because if he hadn't chosen to do that, dude's son would be dead. So it was interesting, his idea. It kind of proved that he wasn't going to go along with something, but it also made your whole plan backfire as well.
Right.
So my quick question, or not a quick question, because we're obviously going to talk about this a bit. Love the sequence of the tension, how it built up and everything. And obviously we know what happens where, you know, they do not get shot. He does not get killed. Rabbi, you know, tries to, you know, pushes the gun away and is grappling with him and takes the gun away, whatever. At the end, when they're talking, when Leon and his son are talking to Loy and the rest of them, and they mention the rabbi was there alongside him. And I forget the phrasing that they used. I wasn't getting the impression that they knew or realized that he had stopped the shooting. Is that the impression you had as well?
It's the impression I had, but I did find it curious the way that the son said, but I didn't think he was trying to shoot me. And there's a disconnect there. Obviously, I think Loy follows that up in a way that says, no, this is transactional in a way you don't see it. Because what's your last name? Your last name's my name. And so when they start talking about what a proxy is compared to, you know, to killing somebody to hurt him.
Right. The kid didn't get that. Like, no, we share the same name. Killing you hurts me. That's why he's right. Killing you. It's, you're not a substitute for me. He's killing you specifically to hurt me. So that's not a proxy. It's killing someone you love.
Right. And so I think Loy did not take it that you know, Rabbi Milligan wasn't trying to break it up or save it. So, but this is also the man who promised him he'd look after his son. So,
Before they get into the conversation with Dr. Center, that was kind of like the weird sticking point. There, I don't know. Weirdest, not weirdest, because I think he already had felt of the men he had met. This one seemed to be the most, for lack of a better way to put it, most trustworthy. This was the one who was entrusted with the care of his son and actually seemed like a decent person and not, you know, as much of a quote unquote gangster as the rest of them. Maybe,
right.
Not just because he wasn't Italian, but whatever. And maybe we don't know this, but it's very likely Loy either knows his story or has just figured it out for himself, because right. He is like the one Irishman in this entire family of Italians and with a name like Rabbi. So that's kind of probably, you know, Loy seems to be a pretty smart guy. I think he probably has already figured out what he is. Could be wrong, but that's my interpretation.
No, I agree with that. I think that he gets it and understands it.
So, where is he going with this? Oh, well, obviously, we're eagerly waiting the next episode as far as what's going to happen when, because the rabbi has to now find Josto to tell him what happened. We're getting like these different things, because he's got to tell him what happened. And how that's gonna go combustible on the Fada side. Meanwhile, as we saw at the end, and it also showed why Dr. Senator is, you know, the wise man that he is. He is the one that points out who gave the order here. He's aware there is a tension. Is it the boss or is it the brother? Because there right now there is a difference, because obviously he doesn't want to start a war. You know, especially if it was something that wasn't intended, wasn't, you know, ordered from high above. If it was someone's reckless brother, they may end up going to war with themselves.
Right.
And, you know, why step into that? Let them destroy themselves for a bit. You know, the only concern there is the fact that his son is there. But you still, I think it's just basically you need to get a sharper view of what's going on. You need to get the whole picture before you do something half-cocked, which is the kind of way that Gaetano is going about things. He is sizing up what's going on within his organization, but his level of awareness of what's going on in Kansas City and with the cannons, I'm going to say right now is limited. The fact that Kalamita was, despite the rabbi saying what he was saying to him, that this is clearly a bad idea, you know, and especially if you don't have authorization from the actual boss here. Yeah, he's got, I'm wondering, he's got to go. That guy, he's got, yeah. Right now, if I'm picking someone to be killed off, you know, quickly on the father side, I think it's going to be that guy. Because he's just, he turned on his boss without a second thought. He went right along with Cortana's thing without even batting an eye. Plus, he's a little bit of a scumbag, so I don't want to.
So there's that. Yeah, absolutely. And it does position Milligan into an interesting place. And if we believe he ultimately ends up to be Mike Milligan's dad, we could see that he could possibly end up assisting Loy's group in taking down the Italians.
Once again, switching sides. That is what he does. That's true. And that's interesting. So Mom could be someone on the canon side. And there's your... It's an interesting. You got all these gangster genes that pass themselves down to form Mike Milligan. You know? Yeah, that's very. It's both interesting. And I think that's right. Even though I haven't done the math to figure out if it worked, because then again, I have no idea how old Mike Milligan is supposed to be when we see him. Because it doesn't matter how old the actor is; maybe he's playing younger than he actually is. But anyway, we're still pretty sure about that. So. Well, you know, I'm sure we'll get a little bit of a flash forward towards the end of the season that'll just, in case you didn't realize, it'll be like that season where we saw, actually, I guess it was season two. Was it season? Yeah, it had to be season two, where we saw the two guys who were the killers in season one, like playing with each other in the playground or something. Yeah. You know, the deaf guy and the other one. I'm hoping somehow they can work them into this season too.
that'd be like the running bit. Those two guys are in every season.
Yeah, just figure, or at least the deaf guy. They just got to figure out how he can do it. It's like, you know, was his father deaf, or were they genetically deaf, or did he have an accent? I can't remember. They told a story about it, but I don't recall. It's been a while. I looked it up for next week. Anything else of note, or did I actually? Wow, did we actually get through it already? I think we did.
Yeah.
Hey, look at that.
Huh. Yeah, and I just made a couple of notes.
Go for it.
That I thought I would share.
Yeah, we got plenty of time for a change.
Huh. The director is Diabla Walsh.
Yes.
Who's an Irish female director who was the first female director to direct an episode of Fargo in season three. It was written by Noah Hawley, and I did some research because I'm a fairly decent jazz fan. And as the talk of Loy's son wanting to be a jazz musician, he talks about bop and Dizzy Gillespie, and in 1950, was the year that Dizzy Gillespie released an album with Charlie Parker called Diz and Bird, which is both of who were huge members of the bop revolution in jazz music. So I thought that was interesting.
It was. We will. Oh, P.S. We will not be playing that on the podcast. Go on.
No.
Because then UK will never let us get in there.
Because we're going to be huge in Europe.
Huge. Be the hugest podcast ever. I can't believe we haven't talked. Anyway, go on. Nope, not going to do it. Go on.
Well, I will wrap up by saying that this pushed the story forward, gave us more character development. The little flourishes of the characters were, I like that the story Loy told that told us something about him. While we like him, you definitely see the harshness in him in a way we'd not seen it before. And I don't think I'd noticed before that scene how much gray was in his hair, but you really see it in his mustache.
Right.
In that scene. I'm curious if this will be a war and then the brothers reckon, or if this will be a reckoning of the brothers, then a war, or a reckoning of the brothers and no war and a truce. So they could go a lot of different ways with all the pieces they've set in motion. But really enjoyed it. And I will say, I mean, I think you and I are probably in agreement. If we had to pick a favorite character, it's probably Dr. Senator. And we liked him the first two episodes, and he sort of stood out in this episode as well.
Yes, I would. If you put a gun to my head and asked who's my favorite character on this season so far, based on the fact that we got three episodes already, yeah, I go with Dr. Senator. Give me a few more episodes, my Oliphant bias might kick in, but right now, Dr. Senator would absolutely be my favorite character, which means he'll definitely be dead by like episode 6 or 7, and then it will be really sad.
The fact that you and I both like him does not bode well.
You know, trust me, be it fictional character or real life person, you don't want to be liked by me.
Exactly.
That's what she said. Anyway, so many times. Anyway, so with that, I guess I can wrap it up then. So if you enjoyed this podcast, and by the way, I know you're going to come up with something else. I just know you will, because that's what you do. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, you'll enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. Like the page and join the conversation about shows like Fargo, like The Boys, like pretty much anything that's on TV. I would say in the movies, but you know, there are no more movies. And so on. You can also subscribe to our feed on Apple Podcasts. And when you're there, you can also rate and review us. I have no idea if we've gotten any new ratings or reviews over the last year. I'm going to say no. You can also find our entire archive of podcasts, all 273, I believe, with this one. Go to stvdpodcast.podbean.com. And you can, you know, just click on the older episodes at the bottom of the page, and you can go all the way back in time, all the way to the very beginning. And by the way, I've kind of figured this out to a certain extent. You may see some that say the word forbidden on them. I don't know what that means, but guess what? Generally speaking, if you click on them, you know, they're fine. Sometimes you might have to try it a couple times, but they're fine. I have no idea why that says that. It's a mystery. Anything else? Twitter. Yeah, our Twitter handle is at STVD Podcast. STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. So we will be back next week with the next episode of Fargo. And for folks who are watching The Boys on Amazon, Jamie and I will be recording that podcast at some point tomorrow. We haven't nailed down a time because I've got this little thing called baseball I need to be watching tomorrow night. So unless the game really sucks, then maybe I'll just record it earlier. So hopefully, whereas this podcast will be hitting your iPods, and do people have iPods anymore? iPhones or computers, wherever the hell you listen to podcasts. Monday morning, the boys one should be hitting Tuesday morning. We are October 5th. Okay, we're still a few weeks away from me launching the greatest TV drama episodes of all time series of podcasts. I'm going to have to start sending out messages to people for co-hosting duties and stuff. So exciting. And that's pretty much about it. So, Brian, once again, thank you so much for signing up. I know, once again, we're recording into the wee hours, but at least we got it done in a timely fashion, something we're not known for, if, you know, according to David Gott. So there you go.
Well, you know, it's probably too short for him. That's what he said. But in any event, I did not have something extra, but I will say, there was a lot of talk of baseball in this episode, talking about being traded. We hear the baseball game on the radio. And I wonder if there'll be any mention of the very famous Negro League team, the Kansas City Monarchs. So I'll just be curious to see if it would be kind of interesting to see if that popped in at some point. But it was a great episode and enjoyed it. So thanks for having me, and I'll see you next week.
All right. Thank you, Brian. Good night to you, and good night to everybody out there as well.